welcome everybody. Thank you for giving me here the chance to speak. So today I will talk about a non-relativistic ADS-CFT duality, a work done in with Juan Miguel Nieto, Olof Olsson Sachs, Stijn van Tongeren, Alessandro Torielli. So it's a bunch of papers that we've done in this topic, and today I will try to summarize, give you like a broad picture of what we have done. So first of all, let me give you a little bit of motivations about why to study non-relativistic string theory. So the ADS-CFT duality, holography, is the first realization of holography. That has been studied very much, like ADS-5 cross S5, lower dimensional ADS-4, ADS-3 backgrounds. And there has been done a lot of study in that sector. Also deformations of ADS-CFT duality. However, in every example that you can see about this duality, there is always an ADS vibration of your spacetime. So if you want to understand if holography is a truly principle of nature, you would like to understand if you can make holography more general, in general backgrounds. So it would be interesting to understand non-ADS holography. And non-relativistic string theory is one of these examples. So we'll see now a little bit why. So let's say that you are in a relativistic context, and here is non-relativistic. So you have your string moving in space-time. And here, your geometry of the space-time is a Riemannian geometry, Lorentzian manifold, which is defined by one field by an object like that. Then if, when you take the non-relativistic limit for your string will experience a different geometry of the space-time. So basically, what you are doing, you are breaking the structure of your space-time into the 2 plus 8. So 2 is the dimension of the worksheet, and 8 is the co-dimension, the rest of the space-time. So you have a Philbin for your worksheet. And then you have the transverse part. There is a foliation of your space-time. And here you have the transverse Philbin. So your space-time geometry is not defined by one Philbin, but it is defined by 2 Philbins. And this defines a Newton-Cartan geometry. And this is what we are interested in non-relativistic strings. So here, you know that there is a, you can look at the ADS-5 CFT-4 duality. And what we pose the question is, what is the analog in non-relativistic strings? Another ingredient that we always have an eye for here is integrability. So you know that these type of theories here, there is, they are integrable. And integrability is quite powerful because it allows you to reach the spectrum of the theory in a non-perturbative way. So if you take like a strings in ADS-5 process 5, if you look at the string action, that one is a highly complicated action. However, it is integrable. And that was found, the first result was by Bena, Reuben, Polchinski, the Lax pair. And then that was the first signal of integrability. So the idea is that you can take your string in ADS-5. There is a BMN vacuum. So there is a particle moving fastly around the equator of the string. That is the simplest string solution that you could take, and you can expand your action around this BMN vacuum. And therefore, you can define in a large string tension perturbation scheme, you can define your string action perturbed around the free fields in this BMN vacuum. And you can use the corrections of your action to compute Feynman diagrams and have a notion of perturbative S-matrix. However, since you know that it is integrable, you can also reverse the logic and say it is integrable at the classical level. I can also promote it to be at the quantum level and impose some bootstrap equation to get my R matrix. So you impose that there is a Young-Buster, there is an R matrix, an S matrix that satisfies Young-Buster equation, cross unitarity, the some symmetry given from the, your background. And just with those equation that you put down, you can extract an S matrix, which is constrained in the all entries at all loops. And once you have this non-perturbative object, you can set up a Bethe-Ansatz technique, which allows you to reach your spectrum of the theory. So that's a very nice program that has been done in integrability. So it gives you to the spectrum of the string, which then can be checked against the scaling dimensions of your operators that lives on the CFT side. They match, and so it is a very nice proof of holography. So in my talk, basically, what we will try to look is how much of this story and how much you can understand from an integrability perspective into non-relativistic string. So now that we gave the motivation, the outline is the following. So first, I will tell you how to take a non-relativistic limit and get the non-relativistic string action in ADS5, cross S5. Then we will look at the classical string solution. Then we will take one of those classical string solutions. Here we have some BMN or GKP-like solutions. Around the sort of BMN, you can try to see what is the perturbative expansion. So we will talk about the perturbative expansion of your non-relativistic action. And then we will move to integrability. So we will describe a coset formulation of your action, of the non-relativistic action. And we will talk about the Lax pair, a sort of the non-relativistic analog, basically, of the Roiban-Bena-Polchinsky-Lax pair. And finally, we will give some few comments about spectral curve. OK, let's start the journey. So let's start with how to take the concept of how to take a non-relativistic limit when you have an action. So such a question is not very easy. So let's start with a very naive and very simple argument. Suppose that we have strings in flat space. Here, the Polyakov action is very simple. I am omitting the worksheet metric and the index, but you know that they are there. I hope this doesn't create a misunderstanding, but it's a lighter notation. So the flat space, when you're in flat space, the non-relativistic limit taken was first taken by Gomis and Oguri, 2000. So they took the time and rescale it by a parameter. And also a spatial direction and rescaled by the same parameter. And the parameter is supposed to be infinite. So as you can see, flat space is quite a special case because you have the eta, which treats every spatial direction in the same footing. So instead of x1, I could have taken x7. It wouldn't make any difference. However, if you now move to a curved spacetime, eh, You know that your Polyakov action has the metric G mu nu. And such a metric G mu nu can be nasty as much as you want. So it could treat your spatial directions in a very different way. So what is the rescaling here? Well, in general, for a general G mu nu, we don't know yet how to answer this question. The case where we know how to answer this question is when G mu nu is a homogeneous space. So when the spacetime is a homogeneous space, so it means that you can write it as a G over H, as a coset. In this, for instance, this is the case of ADS5 cross S5. In this case, you know that your Polyakov action can be written as Metzger and Seitlin did. So you can introduce Maurer-Cartan forms . So A is your Maurer-Cartan, where G lives on the coset numerator. P is your projector, where you project down into the G minus H. So this is project into the coset. And the angle brackets is an inner product, which is sometimes you ask some properties like a joint invariance under the full G, that you can do it for ADS5 cross S5. Not in any case, not for every homogeneous space, but in some cases you can.
Can I have a dumb question?
Yes?
What if like near null infinity or something like that?
What does it mean, the world sheet?
World sheet for part of it near null infinity, like X is near infinity. And I want to think of the large coordinate as basically like large R. Is there anything I can do?
Large R of ADS5, so you're blocked.
But sure, I'm just asking if there's a sense in which you can apply this to some region of the space then, where there is a scaling of
J. It seems like a global rescaling.
Comparing, say, for instance, like the string embedded at one large R scale versus like a smaller one.
I think that connects with the question on how to understand what is the boundary geometry of this Newton-Cartan. And that is still open. It would be interesting to arrive. I think I will arrive as an open question. Okay, so now that you know that for homogeneous spaces, you know how to write your action in terms of a Metzger-Seitlin form, basically, your action is described by this coset representative. And when you take a choice of your coset representative, that means that you are taking a choice of coordinates. For instance, the simplest example is when G is just the exponential of coordinates times generators. That is a very simple coset representative, but it gives you a very, very ugly metric in ADS5 cross S5. So in general, it is more recommended to take a slightly more ugly coset representative, but have a more a nicer metric in ADS5 cross S5. However, the idea is that you have a choice of G, and that gives you a choice of coordinates. And so now we know how to define the non-relativistic limit. Non-relativistic limit is something that you act on your isometry algebra. So it's something that you act on an object which is independent of coordinates. Basically, it means that you take your isometry of ADS5 cross S5, so SO2, 4, and SO6, and you take an Inon-Wigner contraction that gives you the string Newton-Hooke. In five dimension, plus an Euclidean for the sphere. That's because basically The Inono-Wigner contractions that you are taking consists of basically taking your translational symmetries and you break them into 2+8. So the idea is that you take one linear translation moment is zero to rescale with the parameter, and another one which can be P1, but since here we are in the algebra, it could be like P5. There is no problem to define this object now. And you take C to infinity. So the non-relativistic limit is something well defined at the level of how you contract your isometry algebra. But now, since you know that there is a choice of G is associated with a choice of coordinates, so like from a cos representative, so you know that generators can be thought to be dual to coordinates. So a rescaling of your generators implies that you have a rescaling of coordinates. So now you know how to rescale your coordinates. Okay, so now we have a recipe how we want to rescale coordinates, because we have this homogeneous structure space. It goes through the algebra, there is an algebra contraction, and through the causal representative, we know that rescaling of generators is equivalent of rescaling coordinates. And now that you know how to rescale coordinates, you can plug such a rescaling into your field bind. So you take your relativistic field binds, you plug inside such a rescaling, and you see how they expanded out. So in general, you will notice that there is this kind of a universal structure. So A is 0 and 1. So there is a splitting of your index of the spacetime as a longitudinal and a transverse. Those are the longitudinal, transverse. So the longitudinal, they have always something that the leading order is divergent. Plus something subleading. While the transverse, they just, the leading order, they are finite. So now that you have, for some people that they study non-relativistic string theory in a, without taking a concrete example, like ADS5 or SS5, this ansatz is a starting point. So they just assume that there is such a rescaling of a field bind. For us, it's a bit the other way around. We took a specific background, we made the rescaling of coordinates, and we actually showed a posteriori that the rescaling of a field bind is exactly as it was expected. Yeah.
Which coordinate
becomes an uncoordinate if
non-real? A0 or both A0?
Which coordinate? You mean
which? Where inside the? Signature 1, B minus 1. So which becomes the time coordinate in
Gaussian? Well, the time coordinate is the one associated with this generator.
0?
Yes, P0. So in your algebra, you have a notion of signature basically. You know that P0 is negative and the other one are positive. So in that case, here is natural. Here is quite clear that this is a time translation.
I was just confused because you chose like x1.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't break like the.
With this x1 in flat space. Oh, yeah, right. So if you go back, here is a difference. So you start with Poincaré instead of the conformal algebra. You can do the same Inono-Wigner contraction for the Poincaré. And yeah, so you see that there is a, you single out the algebra breaks. So you contract to Galilei.
Because no more have x1.
It's not, Yeah, no, you, yeah, there is a breaking.
But I think he's asking, like, if you seem to have, like, a boost symmetry of possible frame directions that are...
Yeah, normal. Yeah. There is a boost. I'm ignoring a bit now, yes, but there is a boost that I didn't want to complicate much, but there is a boost.
It doesn't seem like you would need to, why do you have to do that, even though I guess it should be nicer because the world shape basically is can be, like, aligned with that plane, but... Like, I don't know. A world line of a particle in space time, I could take the time coordinate to be the thing that I'm scaling away. And I don't see why, if I have a world sheet embedded in the space time, I need to rescale a position coordinate to.
Because if you just rescale one coordinate for a string, you might end up just with a. With this tau metric, basically, the one that blows up. That is one dimensional instead of two.
It will be great.
Can be. The problem is that when you solve the when you go to the equation of motion, you see that the worksheet is actually imposed to be this tau metric. So there is an identification.
I don't mind that, but technically you didn't have. That's just because Aguri and Gomez wanted to make it nicer for them, right? But you could have a space time where you then rescale just the time coordinate and then ask about a string embedded in it, right? Like.
Yeah, you can do that. It has been done, actually, that thing. It has been done. You arrive to something a bit different. Yeah, it is actually a legitimate non-relativistic string theory. Yeah, but here we focus on this type of setting. So, but you can perfectly study the other one. Yeah. Okay. I hope you answered your question. I don't know.
He just chose to be.
This reduction is like an unusual. That's not unusual.
Yeah. I mean, we can discuss more. Yeah. Okay, so you have your your field line that rescaled. Now you plug back into the metric of your Polyakov. That's where we were. And if you look at your metric G mu nu, so it will have something divergent. Plus something coming from those things. It is finite. So since you have something divergent in your metric, your Polyakov action has some term that blows up. So if you don't want to have an equation of motion that have these blowing up terms, normally, so what has been done is to introduce a B field, to couple a B field, which is closed. So the fact that it's closed means that you are not affecting your equation of motion, because it's a total divergent. The B field is also taken to be divergent. And it's fine-tuned. So it's taken precisely with that shape. So once you couple together those two terms, like this term and this term, when you couple them together in your Polyakov action, they will combine to make a perfect square. And once you have this perfect square, basically you can rewrite your divergent part. Yes? No, but it's something that is a total derivative. So I have the freedom to add to my Polyakov action and not modify the dynamic. If it is a total divergent, it's not changing my equation of motion.
This would be a dumb question. So like, I can treat x, I don't need to go to like a Euclidean. Is there ever a situation where I want to like look at only a region of space-time or? I guess this is a very tangent. The extent to which when I do the path integral over x, like, can I think about like like looking like almost like an RG flow or something. Like I look at X at large like distances, smaller ones, and I try to get rid of modes that are like where the compare like just strings that are say near infinity, and then I have metrics where like C is like an R coordinate, and I should.
Yeah, I don't know how to make it that rigorous. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. But in principle, yeah, I think you have the coupling of modes. You have the slow modes. And, yeah. Large n, obviously. Large r. Oh, no, that was enough. Yeah. Probably, yes. But I can't say how to do it. Yeah, now. So the divergent part of G mu nu plus this B mu nu now can be written in terms of now it is a perfect square, this can be written as a finite part plus a subleaving. However, the price of such a rewriting is that you need to introduce two scalar worksheet fields. So those are two worksheet scalars, which are not dynamical. And for this reason, they are also called Lagrange multipliers. Good. So it's just a rewriting. So the idea is that basically if you solve the equation of motion for those two worksheet scalars and you plug back into the action, you recover the divergent action that you had before. But now, since you have made such a rewriting, now you can take the limit c to infinity and kill the subleading terms and just remain with the finite part of your action. And so then you arrive to the non-relativistic action, which looks like the following. So this term is the finite piece that you remain looks like Polyakov, plus the other term coming from the Lagrange multipliers. Okay, so as you can see, this is the structure of your non-relativistic action. It is quadratic in partial x, and it is linear in partial x. So there is something that looks like a Polyakov, but then there is a linear term typical of this non-relativistic setting. Here, plus and minuses means just light cone combinations of 0 and 1. And E, when you see E, the E, this is the Zweibein of your worksheet metric. Just written in this Lycon combination. Okay, now that you have, so let me say what is this action. So what is the data for ADS5 cross S5? So let's say that ADS5 cross S5, you write it as E, Z, and then you have the coordinates plus the Y. So for ADS, you have T and Z, which are your longitudinal, and the other one are your transverse. And in terms of those coordinates, so if you have like, let's say that you have a longitudinal and transverse, your data, tau mu A, that one spans an ADS2. And E spans something that looks like R3 that is coming from ADS5. So I took out the two longitudinal coordinates. So I remain with something that is three-dimensional, which becomes R3 times a warp from the longitudinal. And the sphere flattened out and became R5. That's the data. So basically, if you look, like your space-time is a bit of a weird structure. It's not any warp product that we know from Riemannian manifolds. It's something that has a dimension 2 field bind, which has spines that is ADS2, and then you remain with something that it has co-dimension 2, that spans something like Minkowski, something like Euclidean space with some warping from the longitudinal coordinates. The first thing that when you want to, so now you want to look at the equation of motion. So in the equation of motion, the first thing actually that is interesting to look is about the equation of motion from the Warshield scalars, the Lagrange multipliers. So those ones are quite simple to study. You can fix a conformal gauge and get rid of all the residual residual symmetry that you might have. So after you fix everything, you can fully constrain your longitudinal coordinates t and z, and they have this shape. Where kappa is a constant. If you want to impose periodicity, it's constrained to be an integer. So the first thing that you notice is that this kappa is the same that you have in time and the same that you have in z. So it means that you cannot just have a non-trivial time without having a non-trivial longitudinal coordinate. And that's just the implication of studying the equation of motion for your Lagrange multiplier. So that means that if you see this profile, is a solution as winding. So any solution needs to have winding, actually, because this is coming from solving the equation of motion for lambda in full generality. And indeed, the winding you see from this tangent, because when sigma spans the interval 0 to 2 pi, the tangent brings you many times, so you have your z coordinates, and you are from infinity minus infinity, you are going up and you are wrapping several times. The same observation of having winding was also made in flat space from a different perspective. In flat space, they also found that the string, the non-relativistic string, needs to have winding, otherwise the spectrum becomes empty. That's the standard phrase usually they say. Okay, so you can also look at the other equation of motion. Now that you solved this one, you can also solve the remaining one. And you can find one of the simplest solutions is the BMN. This one has t equal to kappa tau. Z needs to be this one. And then you have your spinning around S5, which has a different constant, omega, tau, and you have lambda, some profile, like cos of kappa sigma. You might compare this VMN-like solution with a relativistic VMN. Relativistic VMN is t equal to phi equal to kappa tau. So that one is a point-like. This one is not point-like. It is extended along z because you need winding. Here you have a dispersion relation, which is n. You may compute the energy and angular momentum associated with the isometries of your background, the global charges, no, global nodal charges. E is equal to j. And here you have something that is E equal to j squared. So I will say that if you compare the two solutions, this is the first difference that is important. And also, you have this omega that here they are the same, but here they are not. You might also find some other generalization, like other solution, like there exists a GKP-like solution where you have a spinning on the transverse ADS5 directions, but I won't talk much here. Instead, what I will talk is about how to make a semi-classical expansion around this one. So here, so for the relativistic BMN solution, you know that there is the light cone gauge that you can impose. You can impose light cone gauge. So light cone gauge. You take your x plus and minus the combination of t and phi. And after solving the Virasoro constraints and everything, you remain with a model that is that lives only on the transverse direction of your light cone. If you try to do the same here and you try to take your isometries t and phi to be your light cone, well, then you remain with z that is this profile, because what you want to do is expanding around the classical solution. Classical plus fluctuations. So about such an expansion, there are at least two problems. One is that z is not an isometry. So the fact that it's not an isometry means that when you expand around such a solution, you will remain with some sigma corrections in your action. The second problem, well, is that z is not in the light cone. In the light cone. Because the light cone took away two coordinates, t and phi, but you remain still with z. Okay, so basically here, you can still arrive to an expansion around the free fields if you take string tension and the large radius of your radius 5. However, you still remain in the corrections with the sigma dependence, which is a bit problematic if you wanted to find an S matrix later on. So here there is still the question, like, what is the right gauge for this BMN like? It seems like we don't have a suitable gauge choice for this type of solution. And that's still something open. It's still open, the problem of finding an S matrix. Now I move to another topic. I move to the Lux pair and the coset, how to write the action in terms of a coset. So, yeah.
Can you help orient me with this space-time? I mean, one of the things you did, you blew up the five sphere. And yeah. So something you never talked about is the Ramon-Ramon field. Is that gone in this limit?
This is just NSNS. It's tricky. Yeah, it's not included, the Ramon-Ramon. Yeah,
it's not included. It's not there anymore. You somehow scaled it away.
Because it becomes flat, right? Yeah, so one might expect that they should disappear in the limit. No one worked out exactly how to take the limit, but it should be consistently with that, yeah.
Okay, and, yeah. And when I think of that, in the ADS2, can you give me your coordinate system, just so I understand?
Oh, yes, this ADS2 is a... T and Z can be...
like dt minus dt squared plus dz squared over z squared? Or
oh, you can take a Poincaré, yes, for instance. You can take a Poincaré patch. You can yes, we have a number of coordinates where we can take it. There is the so-called Cartesian coordinates, kind of where you Cartesianize the ADS5 cross S5. That's or you can also have something more adapted, like you can take your coset represented to be E is zero, factorizing this way, Z T1. And then all the transverse in this way, and that's also a possibility. Now I can't remember exactly how it comes out of the metric, but.
But you can make these different choices. But when I look at a solution like the I forget what you called it, the winding solution at the bottom, you didn't make a particular choice.
Yeah. Here I took the Cartesian coordinates. I'm assuming that choice. Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about the warp factor they have?
The warp Depends, is it sensible which type of coordinates you take? So it can change, so in the Cartesian is something like is a rational function in terms of z. In other coordinates now,
can you say something simple like it gets big near infinity and small in the middle of the space?
Or? So when z goes to infinity, I think it's something like 1 plus z square, can it be, or 1 minus? I think this is higher, the power here, like something. So I think it goes to exactly, it shrinks, I think, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now I am a little bit confused. So if you took away the phi form, so is your background flat or it doesn't solve equations of motion?
Oh, this one, this solves the equation of motion.
Is it flat? Then
yes,
flat.
Yes.
So then if it's flat and you have some non-trivial wall factors, then it must be singular somewhere. I don't see how.
I think it becomes singular around 1, yeah, probably. I mean.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I cannot imagine that you will get something flat and some non-trivial walk factors without singularity. Now you're going ahead and you will try to quantize strings in an inconsistent from my background.
But well, so far it's just the NS. Right? You just took the sigma model of your strings in
before I look at the sigma model,
yeah.
My background is
broken. Maybe because you have in mind that this is an ADS5 solution, and so you wanted the RR flux. But since you blow it up, and maybe the flux is also went away, then it is still consistent. Yeah, probably. Yeah, we don't know. You don't know about the RR. We just so far it's been done just at the NS sector. So
when you say it's NS, though, you started over here with a B field that you said was trivial.
Yes, yes.
Is it somehow not trivial?
Oh no, it still remains. So basically, you just started with the relativistic string in ADS5 cross S5. Bosonic sector, which has no B field, and you just add the total derivative to the action, which is this one. That one allows you to just make some nicer rewriting. And when you take the limit, it doesn't create any extra B mu new field. So we have no extra.
Well, maybe this is without. In disguise, is this geometry just flat space? It sounds like we've thrown away the Ramon-Ramon field.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a non-trivial B field. It's just geometry.
Maybe, yes. Yeah.
What the non-relativistic dispersion relation looks like? From that DOMA and.
The only dispersion relation I can tell you is this one from this solution, like E equal to J squared. And I don't know any other dispersion relation here. Yeah. But it can be that when you go to infinity, yes, it becomes flat because the boundary of your ADS2 can be.
Yeah, but I'm saying if I evaluate, say, the Riemann tensor in that space-time.
Mm-hmm. The Riemann tensor should have a messed up structure in terms of powers of, before taking the contraction limit, you have a messed up structure with all the powers of C. There is a cancellation that happens at the level of the supergravity. So, like, if you take supergravity, NS sector, just NS, and you, so you take your action to be the Riemann, the usual Heisenberg Hilbert plus the flux of that one. If you make the fine tuning of H to be precisely that B field, then there is a cancellation of the divergent part of coming from this Ricci contribution.
Then I'm not okay. Then I got confused. Sorry, I'll let you go. I got confused again. When you said that was trivial, I thought that meant that H was zero. Was just.
Yes. No, sorry. Right. What have they done? Yes, right. Yes, what here there is a subtlety here. There is a subtlety because of there is also some torsion constraints. There are some technicalities inside. So here is because your metric satisfies some torsion constraint, like partial tau plus something like that. Here you have, but in what I had in mind is that now that I recall, they relax such a condition, so the B mu nu is not closed anymore. And so that is non-trivial. Yeah, it might be different than what we are talking about. Yeah. I'm happy to talk more about that because it sounds like it's a. yeah, there is a lot.
I should let you get on to the learning.
No. Okay, so I move to the Lax pair, right? So the Coset construction. So the idea is that how you can write a non-relativistic. Its background as a coset. So what we managed to do is that indeed there is a G tilde over H tilde construction, where those G tilde and H tilde are not simply the Inonu Wigner contractions of your algebra. It's not just this one. It is just a little bit more, because when you look at the local symmetry of this action, the local symmetry is not just Galilei, but it is Galilei plus some extensions. And you need to encode those extensions inside your local, your isotropy group, basically, at the point of your manifold. So it's a bit technical how to arrive to choose such a coset. I won't give you details, but we also figured out that there is a technique called the Lie algebra expansion that gives you the hint how to arrive to this to the choice of G and H. The moral is that at the end, once you have figured out what is that, your action can be written in a mesocycling form, where now J is a generalized Maurer-Cartan form. So it is the Maurer-Cartan that you have before, plus something, an external current, where inside here you put the information of your Lagrange multipliers. So the idea is that with this J, and you take the inner product, at the end you recover this action. And now, the idea is why you are interested about making such a coset formulation. Well, in the way that Reuben, Bain, and Polchinski were able to find the Lax pair was not just from the Polyakov action, but was from the mesocycling formulation of the action. If you just look in Polyakov way, can be very, very hard to guess what is the Lax pair. So the idea here is the same. Once you rewrite your action in this Maurer-Cartan setting, then it is easier to guess what is your Lax pair. So at the end, we have a Lax, non-relativistic. And our Lax looks like the Lax of Baena, Reuben, Polchinski, where your A is just replaced in one place by J, the generalized Maurer-Cartan, only in one place. Why one place? Well, it's because it is J doesn't satisfy flatness. It satisfies flatness just A. There is some technical rewriting inside. So in just one place, it is enough to get your Lax pair. So at the end, you have your Lax. So flatness of your Lax, flatness of your non-relativistic Lax, is equivalent to the equation of motion. However, this flatness needs to be supported by the extra constraints coming from the Lagrange multipliers. So that's the pack that is equivalent. And those equations of motion are all the equations of motion you will get from your action, except of those one. The reason is because this Lagrange multiplier equation in a Maurer-Cartan form, they look like they are linear of your A in some components of some generators. They are something like that. So they are linear in your Maurer-Cartan. However, flatness of your Lax is something that involves the derivatives of your Maurer-Cartan plus something that is quadratic in the Maurer-Cartan, like A wedge A. So we were not able to incorporate inside a flatness a linear condition. So we needed to put it on top. However, since those Lagrange multipliers are non-dynamical, basically what we are doing is to sit on a constrained surface of your flat of your phase space of the dynamics. Okay, so now that you have a Lax pair, now that you have a Lax pair, it is quite natural to ask if we can reach the spectrum of your theory in another direction. So before we saw that there is this problem with BMN, expanding around this BMN that has those nasty complications. Now that we have a Lax pair, is it possible to find a spectral curve, to write down a spectral curve, and to reach the spectrum from a different angle? And that's what I want to talk. So the spectral curve, it means that you need to understand the eigenvalues of your monodromy matrix. So basically, you have a monodromy matrix, which is defined as the path order exponential of the holonomy of your Lax. The holonomy can be taken, since of flatness, can be taken to be just straight line. And this Lax depends on a spectral parameter. So normally, to formulate a spectral curve problem, you need to understand the eigenvalues of your monodromy and to understand the analytic structures in terms of the spectral parameter. So it is something that lives on a Riemann surface. And if you understand how it goes at infinities and on the branch cuts, then you can constrain the shape of your eigenvalues everywhere in the Riemann surface. However, here we found a property. So just by looking at this monodromy, what we found is that if you evaluated on this constrained surface, the eigenvalues of your monodromy are spectral parameter independent. And so at this point, it seems like you have a no-go theorem to go to look for a spectral curve, because you don't have any dependence and they are just a constant to your eigenvalues. However, there is also some funny things that here happens. You can take your monodromy and evaluate it on your BMN-like solution. And what you find is that such a monodromy is non-diagonalizable. So How you compute the eigenvalues is just solving the characteristic equation. And that is well defined even for non-diagonalizable matrices. However, if you look at what is really your monodromy on this solution, it is non-diagonalizable. And you can write it you can bring it to the Jordan normal form after a similarity, where you have your diagonal and some upper triangular blocks. And what you have is that on the diagonal, here, you don't have spectral parameters. However, if you are in these blocks here you can have them. So normally, when you are in the diagonal case, this is one of the first, actually, if you look in the literature, is one of the first examples where it appears a non-diagonalizable monodromy matrices. Normally, they are diagonalizable. And in the diagonalizable case, what happens is that you can write your monodromy after a similarity to something that is exponential of those are the quasi-momenta, are called Thams-Cartan generators. And those C are Cartan. Now, in the non-diagonalizable case, what we propose is that your monodromy can be written in terms of some generalized quasi-momenta, some generators, which now I'm going to tell what they are. Those generators belong to the maximal abelian subalgebra, mass. So Cartan tells you, it means that your generators, they have an adjoint representation that is diagonalizable, and they are all commuting between themselves. In the mass, we are just dropping the condition of diagonalizability, since it is natural, since we are going to the non-diagonalizable case, and we just remain with the maximal abelian subalgebra. And those Qs now can depend on the spectral parameter. So in principle, with this generalized structure, we are able to find some different objects which retains a notion of a spectral parameter. And in principle, they could provide a spectral curve. Although there are some generalization that you need to formulate, like what is a Cartan matrix when you make a jump above and below a branch cut, that needs to be generalized, and it is for future work. Okay, so I think I can conclude. Yes, I can go to conclusion. So one thing to do is the Y system. So Y system is some system of equations, first formulated by Zamolodchikov. Also, Pedro worked on this with the collaborators. And basically, the idea is that you just look at the isometry algebra of your spacetime, which has a supersymmetry, because supersymmetry is important in this setting. And from the shape of your Dynkin diagrams, you can write down your TBA, your beta equation. So that might be a nice thing to do, maybe, coming from a different perspective from this spectral curve. It might be also a double check or might give some insight. Another point is to introduce SUSY, because so far this is bosonic, so it would be interesting to make this coset supersymmetric and look in that case, and have a Lax pair that is supersymmetric. Another point is about deformations. So it is possible to deform your ADS-5 cross S-5 action, and there are deformations. And if you try to take just a naive rescaling, well, the same rescaling of coordinates that you have done before to the deformed action, What you find is that when you go to the non-relativistic, after taking the non-relativistic limit, the deformation parameter just drops out. That happens, for instance, in the eta deformed case. So now that we have this causal construction, so if we remind how deformation were introduced, deformation were introduced by adding here a deformation operator at the level of the meta-excited in action, an operator which preserves integrability. So it might be possible that we could introduce an operator here. Maybe one could try first with the same type of operator and see if demanding preservation of integrability, if what you obtain at the end is again something that retains now the deformation parameter. So it doesn't drop out as you would do just with the naive limit. That's something to do. Let me finish with this question. It is very much open, but needs to be said. It is about the boundary geometry. The boundary geometry and what is the field theory, the QFT, that lives there. That's a very important question that needs to be answered and reconnects with the title of this talk. Thank you very much for listening.
I just have a quick question. Did you manage to embed these solutions in solutions coming from ADS5?
Yes. So no. No, the answer is no. No, I remember your question, but the one that we looked about slowly spinning, like slowly moving, they have a spin in the sphere. Here you need something that has a spin in ADS to recover, otherwise it doesn't connect. That 5 is in the sphere, but it's the only spinning that you have. The one that Arkady considered in that paper, they have multiple spinning in the sphere. I think it can, and it does have, and it is just a point like in the ADS. So it's just that one. I don't know how it can.
The analog of those by Arkady, but with two spins in ADS.
Yeah, I want to look about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you could embed it. I think many of these questions you could maybe answer by just taking the ADS5 solution where everything is regularized and then slowly, carefully take
them. Yeah, you have always to be careful if geometrically you are blowing up something that needs to be regularized in your pathway that you are doing. But in principle, yes, it could be.
The solutions will be slowly rotating, right? So mechanically, they will be exploring an underlying.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's thank Andrea.